NYU many years ago, many of your cases, and to see you now in the stage of life that you're in. The truth is, I've been quite exhausted probably for the last 20, 30 years or so. So like a continuous state since Ahuva Blass was born 25 plus years ago. But especially the last couple of weeks, I was in Vienna on a YU trip, and a lot of work going into that, and then a lot of exhaustion since then. So my wife said, like, why are you like running around? You're gone every single night this week, and why are you running to Teaneck? So hey, it's great to see all of you. it's so great, but it's great to see all of you. But the reality is that I think it's fair to say that, you know, every community has different strong suits to it. And I think there's a lot that the YU community has an enormous amount to feel prideful about. But one thing living in Muncie that I have a lot of respect for in the broader Muncie community, even people that are not the biggest learners, is that you go into like any shul in Muncie, and there's just like a kol Torah a night. There are people that are there. There are children that are there. There's an enormous amount of food and energy. There's parents learning with their children. There are people learning with Chavrusa. There are Chaburas going on. I mean, like a Balabata shul, not people that are learning full-time, but just part of the culture of a community. And the transformative nature of that in a community, of having a Beis Medrash, of having a Kol Torah, of fathers or husbands going out to learn at night, you know, for everything that everyone here has accomplished in their life and learning and Torah Traga and Shalavim and Yeshua Kotel and on and on and on, Keren B'Yavne, you know, this might even be more important than that. You know, this is basically for the rest of one's life. You know, not 18 years old in yeshiva, not 19 years old, not 20 years old in the YU Beis Medrash, but for the rest of one's life, a person making a statement of Kem Chayenu and making that statement in the context of one's family and one's home. And again, the transformative nature of that in a person's life, you know, I can't begin to tell you how significant that is. And I'm so proud of Rav Ben-Zion and Rav Shua, two of the next real great leaders in Klal Yisrael in our community, and that they're part of this. And obviously their energies have created something so beautiful here. I wanted to speak just for a few minutes just to I reflect on something that I've been giving thought to the last few weeks. And that's the different stages of life that people go through, just as people, and specifically as Ovdei Hashem. We think about, let's say, the stage of a person being in high school. You know, the average person in high school, I guess to some degree, is a knucklehead, for better or for worse. But if there's any hashpa that's there, it's a hashpa that comes klapei chutz. Right? A person goes on Yad B'Yad, or a person goes on NCSY Kolel, or some NCSY event, and they feel the koach hashpa of an event, of music, of madrichim, of Eretz Yisrael, of NCSY Kolel. And then a person goes off to Eretz Yisrael as well, and it's much the same thing. It's not so much a person staking out their own intense spiritual identity qua themselves, but it's sort of receiving that in a way from the environment around them, you know, from the Beis Medrash that's around them, from their Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael, from the Avira Diara. You know, a person is very much like a reflection of that spiritual space in Eretz Yisrael and in yeshivas. And to some degree in YU, although YU is like something of like a transition period, it's also that, you know, it's sitting in a Beis Medrash, you walk into the YU Beis Medrash in the morning, the vibrancy of that, the vitality of that place, the Rebbeim that are there, the Chevra that's there, you know, and everything to some degree is being sort of like siphoned off of the Kedushas HaMakom. And then all of a sudden, 22, 23, 24, a person gets married, hopefully, a person moves on, a person gets an apartment, a person starts to work. Sort of the coal of the Beis Medrash begins to fade, you know, and then a person finds themselves almost having to forge their own unique spiritual identity that comes very much internally, that comes very much feeding from the inside. And then many people are lost. You know, if you go to communities, even people who 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you know, prided themselves on learning, on being a Ben-based Medrash. And then a few years later, you know, it's so hard to sustain that. I remember I got a call from a couple I was very close with. And, hey, Dave, how are you? And, not to interrupt, my son actually just imitated me at the YU Purim Chagigah last week. I wasn't there, but it was... So one thing that he did during this invitation was like starting to talk to people, a little speaking. It's like, yeah, you remember what I was talking. Like, so right in the middle of like talking, I'll start like, so anyway, hello Dave, how you doing? So a guy called me that he and his wife were having a child, and she wanted to name the child, I think it was like some, you know, I thought it was a pretty okay name, something like Bailey, something along those lines. I don't know what they ended up naming the child. And he felt... that's really not, you know, appropriate. It's like, I want to give, you know, Sarah Rivka or Rachel Chana or call her something. And like, Bailey's feels so secular and it feels so modern. So the wife gets on the phone, is a wonderful person, and she's like, you watch Game of Thrones every night, right? Why are you giving me mussar about Bailey when you haven't stepped foot in a base medrash and you're watching inappropriate stuff and I can't tear you away from the TV? And the point of that is that, like, he still viewed himself in a way, the identity of being like a Ben-based Medrash. You know, he's like a firm guy. I don't have my daughter named Bailey. But the reality is he hadn't learned, you know, for months. And he's sort of sitting, you know, binge-watching TV late at night when he came home from work. And I'm not saying that critically. But, like, once the sort of, like, the avira of that makom ends up fading and diminishing, so does a person, like, have, like, a koach to almost create and cultivate one's own, like, intense, religious, spiritual personality. In a way, it's something that the Bali Musars speak about, like, in the different paradigms of the Mikdash. But on the one hand, you had, you know, Bais Rishon. Bais Rishon was a place where even just being, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of the first base of Mikdash was a source of inspiration. We know, of course, from the mission of the Gemara, people wanted to convert by just being around sort of that time of life and the beauty of that place. And that's one model. You know, that's one model of Hashoras HaShechina. Just like connection to that place was the forming identity in the lives of Klal Yisrael. But what the Zohar speaks about and the Baal Shem Tov and the Bali Musar, but V'shechanti B'socham, the very language of Shechanti B'socham is implication that there are different paradigms and different models of Mishkan, right? There's sort of like the quiet Mishkan that a person creates and builds and gives life to and cultivates in his own life. And implicit in the idea of the building of the structure of the Mishkan that's going to have its own source inspiration is that there are different models implicit in that mitzvah d'oraisa of Binyan Beis HaMikdash, Binyan Beis HaKnesses, etc. Now the question is, if we're not dependent on Makom, and we can't be dependent on Makom, so David coming before, and sometimes thinking about, let's say, the model of, let's say, a place like Netiv Aryeh, where the encouragement is, like, keep on coming back to yeshiva for Shoshana, for Yom Kippur, people coming in their 40s and 50s and 60s and bringing their grandchildren back to Netiv Aryeh. There's something very beautiful about that. It creates like a brotherhood of Netiv Aryeh alumni. Like, on the other hand, it's like an implicit statement of to be reliant, like, on that place, right? Like, this is the place you get your nourishment. Instead of a statement of, like, you know, don't come back here. Like, wherever you go, like, you find your Rebbeim and your Mekomos and your corners of the world. But once a person stops, almost by definition, having those places, so where then does that nourishment come from? And the answer, obviously, or maybe not so obviously, is thinking about a very famous sheet of the Ramban. The Ramban speaks about this in several places. But the major place, the Ramban talks about Tamei HaMitzvos. And we know there's a very long discussion, a very long debate, a very confusing discussion, a very confusing debate about the nature of Tamei HaMitzvos. And we know there's a very lengthy discussion in the Rambam, in the Mor Nevuchim, in the Rambam Mishnah Torah, in two different places. And the Ramban also has like different types of opinions, whether he's speaking as a sort of Baal Machshava, whether he's speaking as a Kabbalist. And the Ramban's basic idea based on the Medrash is that the purpose of mitzvos, the tam ha-mitzvos, what's the language the Ramban uses? Right, letzari fesabrios. It's to refine and to cultivate a person. And therefore, let's say by the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, we don't say, and that's based on the Mishnah in Megillah and Brachos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing this because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rachmim on the bird. We can't say that. Right, the Gemara says that mitzvos are gzeros. We can't sort of analyze why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given a mitzvah, but we can say that every single mitzvah is there as a way of cultivating and refining man. So therefore, you send away the mother bird to refine the mid of chesed. We don't kill the father animal and the child animal in the same day to refine us as far as sensitivity. And every single piece of the Shulchan Aruch is there as refinement, right? Why do we tie the laces on our right shoe versus our left shoe? What type of midas harachamim is that supposed to cultivate in us? Every single action we do has a cultivating and refining letzar v'sabrios type of quality to it. Now, what question would you ask on that Ramban? If the entire purpose of mitzvos is letzar v'sabrios, to refine man, what then is the problem? What then becomes almost like the obvious question based on that Medrash and based on that Ramban? The obvious question is I live in Muncie. If you drive down Route 306 in Muncie, during traffic, trying to get to a supermarket, you know, you sort of like take your life into your own hands, right? People who are doing the mitzvos, people that are keeping the Shulchan Aruch, people that are keeping every single sort of element of halacha, people that are doing shiluach hakei, people that are tying their shoes the right way, people that are building sukkah, but yet we see that it's not automatic. And this is something that is discussed even in some of the works of philosophy, that is that element of litzarei fesabrios, is that automatic? If we keep the Torah, we keep the mitzvos, does that automatically bring refinement into our lives? And the answer would seem to be probably yes on some level, on some deeper cosmic level. But behaviorally, probably the answer is no. It's not enough just to do the mitzvah, but there needs to be in every single act an element of intentionality and an element of mindfulness, an element of thoughtfulness, an element of connecting the action to sort of the higher purpose of the action, right? And without intentionality, our lives just have a fundamental emptiness to it. Our lives just have like a fundamental, almost deadness to it. Therefore, everything that we do is with a certain intention. Like every word that we say, every bracha that we say, and how we walk into a room, and when we kiss a mezuzah, are we sort of even like conscious of like what that means? Like every piece of our lives has to have with it an element of intentionality, which also becomes somewhat overwhelming, right? If we're sort of intentional about everything, it's hard sometimes like breathe in the middle of that. Now, why do I mention the element of intentionality? Because when a person can no longer rely on the structure of the makom, a person can no longer rely on their rebbeim or the feeling in yeshiva or walking into a base medrash, you know, late at night, like 1 o'clock in the morning, and that feeling there. You know, I still think back to some of my most beautiful moments in YU of just being the base medrash, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and walking out of that room and then going up to the roof of Mus Hall. I remember one night, I mentioned this at Malav Malka several years ago, but they turned off the lights at midnight. This was like the big cost-saving measure. We're going to turn off the lights. It was during Ben HaSemesterim, and there were like 20 guys that were there at midnight. And we all went to the bodega across the street, and we bought candles, and we like lit candles in the base medrash. It was a total disaster. Like, there's like wax melting everywhere. But that feeling of being in a base Medrash at 12:30 in the morning, like by candlelight. But you don't have those moments anymore. And all that we have in the middle of that then, for the rest of our lives, is a heightened level of intentionality. There's like no fireworks. There's no context. There's no framework. There's no place. There's really sort of no Kedushas HaMakom. Obviously, we have a shul. We have a base Medrash. But, you know, it's not really alive in that same way. But if what we bring into that space instead, when a person says, Modim, Achayenu Hamsurim Biyodecha, V'yal Nishmoseinu HaPakudas Lach, and like our lives are infused by that spirit. If a person, when they're going off to work, and they stop for a second with like a certain sense of like mindfulness of, wow, like, I can actually go to work and make a living and support my family and the bracha and shefa in my life. When a person eats, when a person converses, when a person interacts with their wife, when a person walks through their door, like everything could be infused in such like a meaningful way with intention and kavana and meaning. And that is the ultimate paradigm of the Migdash Ma'at. Right? That's the ultimate paradigm of like building something in a way that's like far, far, far more meaningful than just being in a base medrash. You know, like a base medrash is like a makam tzibur, it's a makam klal. It's not like the alive life of the yachid. I sometimes like think on a Friday night before I make kiddush. And my family's there, and just like stopping and reflecting on that scene of the year Tuf Shin Pei Beis, to be making Kiddush, you know, in a nice home with my family, being Mekadosh HaShabbos, learning around the table. Just like to live with that conscientiousness. Like, and that's the Mekadosh. It's not the place, and it's not the makom. It's just like a certain type of quiet, quiet life of constant elevation and constant dignity and constant sanctity. I don't know, I was thinking about this, but I had an interaction with Rabbi Neuberger a few weeks ago. Everyone here knows Rabbi Neuberger. It's hard to imagine a better role model just for life, you know, in every domain of life. Hasmada and a Tam Chacham, of course, but just as a husband, as a father, as a listener, as someone who is known to be Olam Chaveiro, as someone who is just an incredible human being. So I went to go speak to him a few weeks ago about a situation with the Talmud and the Yeshiva. I don't want to talk about any details because people that are still around YU now, they may start thinking, but it's like a real, real, real tragic situation with this Talmud's, like a family situation. And this person started dating now, and I'm on the resume for the person, and I started getting calls about this person, and I wasn't sure how to handle like this piece of information about this Talmud, because people were going to ask about something that was very bolate, and something that was very, very known. So I went to go speak to Rabbi Neuberger about it in his office. It was right before he was supposed to give shiur. And he was aware of the situation also. And he just started crying in his office. Like, he put his head down, and he was crying for like 6-7 minutes. And I think about that, and it's just this beautiful life of feeling and nobility and heightened sensitivities and heightened sensibilities, not dependent in any way on a makom, but just tapping into one's own godless ha'adam with deep feeling. And my bracha to all of you, as you're in really a very sort of like challenging stage of life, you know, in apartments, just married, in many cases having children, constantly exhausted, dragging oneself to a base medrash at night, which is just incredible what all of you are doing. I sometimes will see Ben Sion as he walks in the door of the base medrash in the morning at YU, and I know exactly how many hours he did sleep or didn't sleep the night before. And it's hard in the middle of all that to create sort of that chativa of Kedusha in a person's life. But the only way to do it is through intentionality and awareness and mindfulness and stopping and thinking and reflecting with that beautiful sense of shefa. And Mir Hashem, all of us can create that in our lives now, can allow that to be the fuel in the homes that we are zocha to build. And whatever the future may bring, as far as an actual base of Mikdash, we can go through our lives with a sense that we're creating our own Mikdash, with those own internal feelings, that intentionality, and the beautiful life that we've been entrusted with and that we're blessed to live. So thank you. Thank you.